Part two of SFS podcast number 26, as we go into review Gotham episode 14. Probably one of the best episodes of Gotham yet. A very sad ending for me, but a very dramatical moment in the series of Gotham, as Jerome, who killed Bruce Wayne's parents, it all comes to a big, it's not the end of the season, but it feels like the end of the season, as it's such a special climactic episode. But we'll get to Batman, and we'll get to a bit of more of the El Narco. But the new sport that is more exciting than MMA, obviously it's not everything, because it's just stand-up fighting, which I'm getting into at the moment, is Glory. Now it's stand-up fighting, no wrestling involved, just kicking, punching, basically. I wouldn't say it's straight kickboxing, it can be a bit of Muay Thai, a bit of Jeet Kune Do, Filipino, a lot of different styles, but obviously none of it is grabbing. It's all stand up. And the guy who's commentating it, used to commentate on Pride and commentates on did commentate on SmackDown, which would have been a great duet between JBL and him. But now he's on NXT, I think, if you know who I am talking about. Well, this is the fight that I am going to call Anderson Silva fighting. Yes, the Brazilian Anderson Silva, not the legend Anderson Silva. Rico Verhoeven versus Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva, the Brazilian Anderson Silva, but not the legend Anderson Silva from the UFC, who is the greatest UFC fighter so far of all time. Now this is a classic fight. Very, very entertaining fight that I am going to commentate. So there are the rules. 5 rounds, 3 minutes each. Punching, kicks, knees are legal strikes. 3 knockdowns in a round or 4 and the fight will result in a TKO. Doctor or referee can stop the fight. So if there's 3 knockdowns or 4 in one round, then as it's a traditional ring, Tim Hughes, if you've heard of Tim Hughes, I've heard of Tim Hughes. He commentated on Cage Rage. And he did some promotions for Europe, which he commentated on in cage fighting. And this is in New Jersey. So, New Jersey, you're very lucky to see this fight as I go through it. Glory, obviously it's not UFC, but it is more entertaining in my aspect than UFC. So keep it up, Glory, because you can surpass boxing, and it's got a promotion of SBN. Anderson Silva, the Anderson Silva of Glory. These are 2 heavyweights, but they move like lightweights. 30 height 6.3. Yeah, Bratic, not Anderson the Spider Silver. Humidity. No. Rico is a Netherlands fighting legend. He was actually in the Netherlands MMA scene. So he can fight the best of them. 3 years younger than Anderson Silva. 27 years old. 5 years older than me. Doesn't really matter what age you are. From 18 to 50. Really, in my opinion, in the fight game. That's when you can be at your physical peak or not. It depends how you choose to live your life, what you eat, what you do. If you use drugs and all that shit, at 19 you can look like I did. I look like I was 40 odd. It depends how you live your life. So you can't tell the difference really with ages between 18 and 50 in my explanation. Now here we go. He blocked the kick with a Muay. He's got more of a Muay Thai, this Rico. I don't know, kick to the knee by Silver. Side kick. Oh, that was a horizontal teep kick, a high horizontal teep kick. But he moved his knees before. He didn't do it Jeet Kune Do way, because Jeet Kune Do way, you just flick it without using the knees to expand the kick, which makes it slower. There's both of them. He's south. At Silver southpaw. Rico orthodox. Kick to the kidney there by Rico. And southpaw. Rico. Oh, trying to go over the overhand, but he missed. Covering up his face. Boxing style. Rico. And some Silver there, you can hear that. With a right and then a kick to the knee. If you side to the knee, the right side to the knee, it's going to cripple you. Thank you for saying that, Anderson Braddock Silver. But I think they have met and trained together, both Anderson Silvers. Oh, great kick there. He needs to kick not into the inside of the knee, but into the outside. Say it's my left knee, you kick to the right of it, and there's a little position in there. That is one of your tender positions in your body that will put you down. That's it. Oh, an uppercut, cheap kick to Silver. Snap jab. Try and get him with the kick, the standing kick, but blocked by Silver. Oh, comes from the uppercut then, Silver. He comes in southpaw like, uses his right hand to go in the uppercut. Then a kick to the front of the legs by Rico, but then a jab comes back. Oh, kick. Kick by Rico to the stomach. And Anderson Silva comes, oh, the jab there to the stomach, flicking his jabs as Rico. And then a switch kick as he moves it, he steps and there's a sweep kick to Silva, but now Silva coming in. But Rico has definitely got this round on points. There's all these little kids outside my house fucking playing on scooters, distracting my commentary on this podcast. Yeah, let's see. So he's named after the Chuck Norris character in Missing in Action. 2007 Brazilian Cruiserweight Champion. 2012 Super Compact World Grand Prix Runner-Up. His quote, you have to make it a street fight. You can try to fight technical with him because he's so good within them boundaries. But there are no boundaries. But Rico is the champion. And Anderson Silva needs to live up to the Anderson Silva name. And beat Netherlands Rico. Now here we go, round two of this five round match. There's a flick jab from Rico. Another flick jab, as he's in the orthodox stance, Silva in the southpaw. Oh, knee to the stomach by Rico. Couple of jabs exchanged beforehand. Rico comes in, oh, Rico with the hook, and then the kick to the right side of the knee, and then trying to flick his jab here. Rico with the head movement, and then the kick to the leg, as Rico is the aggressor with them snap jabs, them snap left jabs from an orthodox stance, and that hitting, and he's going for the power. Anderson Silva is just trying to throw massive fucking haymakers, but just getting blocked. Looking for the knockout is Anderson Silva, as Rico's taking his time, just teep kicking him away, jabbing away with the left combination by Rico, flicking them lefts that are catching Silva. Silva still using, throwing them overhand shots. All these haymakers trying to knock him out, but he's just wasting his energy here as Rico's coming back with them kicks to the knees, and then a right hook to the face as Rico is coming in. Silva tries a knee, misses again with a knee to Silva. Then Rico dodges another right hand by Silva as Rico's taking his time, cool and collective. As he snapped his right hand as a jab from the southpaw stance, Silva, but no, combination kick to the knee, and he's down! Silva is down! That was a roundhouse Dutch road kick right to the knee, the inside of the knee that tripped him down. Oh, trying that head kick there was Rico, snapping them lefts again. Oh, goes for the kick, and then another kick. Comes with a left hook and straight away in seconds with a head kick that knocks Rico down. Now that's the second time in this round. 30 seconds left in the round. Now, if he gets knocked down again, it could be a win and he could retain his championship. Could Rico? He snapped left over and a knee to the face. He didn't have his head down. He managed to get his knee above his chin to knee Silva in the face. He's mixing it up here. Another kick, and that's it. Inside kick, and Silva is finished. That was a great performance by Rico. Mixing up them snap left hands. All that Silva did was try and go with them haymakers, that overhand punch. But Rico with them inside kicks. And then Dutch inside kicks, mixing up with the knees, mixing up with the snap left jabs. Glory 33, as Anderson Silva does not live up to the name as Anderson the Spider Silva, as he wasted his energy too much on throwing these big punches. But look at these kicks. Look, just one kick to the other leg. Another kick. Outside and inside kicks. And then the head kick. As he's doing the inside leg kicks, he's just creating rhythm. Like he's creating rhythm with his snap lefts. With his snap lefts. And then his inside kick right into the right knee. Right of the right knee. as the left of the left knee, I told you, is the most vulnerable part of the body. Now, let's get to Gotham Season 3, Episode 14. Now, as Joker takes Jerome, basically is Joker, and basically is resurrected from the dead. Jerome plays a part in the early series, but you don't know he is the Joker. Just like Ed, you got a feeling he is the Riddler, and I think he will be turning into the Riddler. But this episode has two unique stories to it. The story of Ed, which is the Riddler, luring Penguin into a warehouse, strapping him to a car, tying him up with rope, then having a big gallon of acid, carbon chloride, above where Penguin is, onto the car, and a chain that's holding the car and holding ice. Now what he does is he lights the flame, and once the ice has dissolved, the chain will let loose and all the burning acid will kill Penguin. Now, the same time this is going on, oblivious to Jim Gordon, Harvey and everyone else, the Joker, Jerome, first he's took as a joke, as a wannabe. He's in this institution with all his followers, and he's gaining many followers. His main target is Bruce Wayne. Now he's got all these psychopathic people dressed in red, which is good. This is the beginning of Joker, as he staples a mask onto his face with blood stitches to make the classic Joker smile, with stitches above it. Now, the police think he's just another fake wannabe. Get a tip off about him, Gotham Police, James Gordon, Harvey. They all go in, storm into the place. Think they've got Jerome, the guy who's leading it. But that isn't Jerome they've got. They've got another guy. They kill and shoot everyone in the building, and then take the guy who thinks is the leader of this cult down to put him in the van. The channel news van manages, which is Jerome, and the cops are holding the other guy who thinks he's the leader of the cult, who thinks he's gonna lead it with Jerome. Jerome kills both of the two police officers, and then as Gordon's back's turned in seconds, escapes in the Channel 9 news van. With him was Jerome, and then they discuss methods of how the apocalypse is coming, how Gotham is rotted, there is nothing in Gotham, no good in Gotham, all they are is corruption, the wolves or the sheep that just hide inside the houses under the beds. As Joker pulls out his philosophy of how to take over, he's Jerome, but you can tell he is the Joker, as he staples his mask together, and by then he's got loads of followers. Now this way it gets interesting. He sends a message out as it's only used to apprehend him. The guy who's supposed to be the leader of the cult, he's tied up and burnt in flames, gallons of flames, as Jerome sends his message onto mainstream Gotham news. Now, you switch back to the Penguin bit, as he keeps switching to these two magnificent stories. A cop comes in as Penguin, the acid from up above is about to drop onto Penguin. The officer cuts the wires. Then Penguin escapes, only for the black woman to capture Penguin. As Penguin goes back to his residence, put a rope round his neck and squeeze it, and ask him, will he kill Ed, which is the Riddler, or you're going to die? And that is the blonde psycho, Gordon's ex's ex, that says that with a gun pointed towards Penguin. And Penguin mysteriously, crazily talks about how he loves Ed, which he loves him, and no, I will die for him. And then Ed comes in the room. It's all conspired together, because Penguin is responsible for Ed, the Riddler's mistress Death, who the Riddler really loved. But Penguin loves the Riddler, and that's why Penguin did it, so he could have the Riddler. Talking about sacrifice, for to love someone you got to sacrifice it. But he didn't take that term, and said he'll keep Ed alive and rather himself die. But the Riddler walks into the room, and he explains to the Riddler, as the Riddler says, you're never going to change, Penguin. You only do things for yourself, for your self-preservation. Penguin said, look, I was going to sacrifice myself in order for you not to die. But he knows that they're all in it together. The former kingpin of it all, Falcon, the black woman, the ninja black woman, the blonde psycho woman, and the Riddler. And they're all in it together, and Penguin's basically trapped, and I'm not liking this. Now let's go to Joker's intentions. Bruce Wayne. Now this is where it gets interesting, because Jerome killed Bruce Wayne's family. In the core of the story of Batman is Batman. The two highest up in Gotham is Batman and Joker. And Joker is the biggest threat to Batman. So we see the seeds of this planted in this episode. The ultimate seeds planted. Now, as he storms Bruce Wayne's house, he's going to kill Bruce Wayne there and then. Bruce Wayne uses a good manipulation tactic, saying, how are you going to kill the great Bruce Wayne, who's responsible for running this city, and everything comes through his enterprises that runs the city. So you're going to kill me in this way. And you're going to make it official, like on national television. You're going to kill the great Bruce Wayne. just as you trash his house. It's not very erotic way that you'd want to kill me, is it, Jerome? As Jerome is obsessed with killing Bruce Wayne, aka Joker is obsessed with killing Batman. So he kidnaps Bruce Wayne, and then his Bruce Wayne's guidance master, the guy who says Master Bruce, keep forgetting his name, but he is going to get killed, and he says, I'll see you in the next life. As Joker's followers are about to kill him, one has a machete, one has a crowbar, and one has an AK. As this is happening, James Gordon gets a hunch and goes to the Bruce Wayne's residence. As he goes in, he shoots the three of them, and both of them, Master Bruce, his guider, and James Gordon beat the shit out of the rest. And then, here we go to the great bit, as Joker, great visual special effects on this. This is what makes this episode so unique, is the Joker creates a circus for himself. In this big circus, like a theme park, it is the Joker's theme park, it's the Joker's playhouse, as he takes Bruce Wayne to be sacrificed there, but he saves Bruce Wayne to the main event, as he shows Bruce Wayne Joker's own version of the circus. Bright lights, the spinning wheels, all these circus rides, all these circus play jobs, all the circus activities that you do on a circus, like dartboard, smash the melon, hit the pop-up thing, win the toy, whatever. But Joker's circus, throw darts at the right place, hit the ball, throw the ball, hammer the little mannequin head as it pops up. All these little traps Joker has, but Joker uses real people to do it, as all Joker's followers are there participating in the freakish acts of the Joker's circus, as this is a circus of the Joker. It's a lovely circus that I would participate in. As he throws darts as a game, his little circus games of throwing darts at real humans, throwing balls at real humans, hitting the hammer as the thing goes, as the ride, if you hit the hammer and it goes up to a certain meter, he hits the hammer and then a knife comes out and kills the guy. As higher as the harder as the hammer hits and the higher the thing, the machine goes up, the harsher the guy dies from the blade that hits him. Now you've got the other things that Joker's doing, like the pop-up dolls that you'd usually hit as one of them to win a prize, as these pop-up dolls are actually humans. So the prize is basically he's got a real hammer, and it's like a circus, like any circus you go to, as the pop-up things pop up. Joker hits them with a hammer and his followers. Another is the dartboard and shooting range. As what you'd do at a circus, you'd get a gun and you'd shoot a specific toy and you might win something. As humans, but real humans are passed by as they go along the line as like target practice, as the target goes from left to right and they're shooting the humans as they're going, or as they're popping up they suddenly shoot them, just like as they pop up from a little side cardboard sideboard just below them, they pop up from each box and a vicious hammer goes to the head. Now there's one guy who's probably the semi-main event, is tied up on a Titron, and Joker is going to get a massive ball and throw it at him. Bruce Wayne begs him not to, but the Joker sickly says okay, I won't do, but then cuts a wire in a great trap by the Joker, a great invention by the Joker. The guy, the victim of the Joker, falls into a massive fish tank and gets eaten up quickly by one of the deadliest exotic fishes in the world, the piranhas. Now it's time for the main event. Keep that frown upside down as Joker kills one of his followers, gets his blood, and puts a frown on Bruce Wayne. It says, keep that frown upside down. Now it's time for the main event, as the stage is set, as the circus party of great lights and circus vibe of Joker's ultimate circus comes to the end. This is the main event. Bruce Wayne's hands are held tightly to a rope, and Joker comes out and is ready to execute Bruce Wayne by this multicolored cannon. He puts in various tools, like massive heavyweight balls, loads of different style knives, blades, machetes, and he's going to shoot that out of a cannon. I think an explosion, some explosive devices are in there as well, and it's connected to a wire. Once he sets that wire, then the cannon, boom, all them stuff come out of a cannon and decapitate Bruce Wayne. As he's about to do it, Bruce Wayne tries to get out of it by his handcuffs, but unfortunately for Bruce Wayne, he's not in time. But Gordon, Harvey and Master Bruce, his guidance come. As Gordon throws a shot in the air, the riot is on. All three, Gordon, Harvey, Bruce's guidance guy, Master Bruce, fights all the people as Joker's about to set off the cannon by lighting the wire that'll set all the weapons, explosive devices, different types of knives, the heavy balls, right into Bruce Wayne. It happens, but Bruce Wayne is not there, he's gone. So he managed to escape at the last minute of Joker's terrifying circus, as he invites Joker, Jerome, into a maze, like say off the movie Enter the Dragon, where Bruce Lee enters Han lures Bruce Lee to a glass maze. I think they probably got that off Enter the Dragon by Bruce Lee. At the time, he's trying to, it's like a little trap Bruce Wayne's got for the Joker, as Joker keeps firing off his Magnum, I think, thinking he's seeing Bruce Wayne, through their magnifying glass, shoots, but the glass breaks. He's not there. Keeps shooting through the glasses. He sees Bruce Wayne's reflection, but he's not there. Then he puts down the gun and says, "We'll fight it out," as he pulls out his little Joker knife. Now, the Joker knife is like my knife. I've got a Joker knife from World War One, from my granddad who participated in World War One. I've got a nice, precious Joker knife that has got no dust or anything on it. It's 100% clean. Now, as he said, "We'll have it, me and you, Bruce Wayne." This is when Bruce Wayne shows his ultimate skills. He pushes Joker to the floor and gives him a couple of massive ground and pound, as Joker's just laughing like a madman, crazily. And as he gets the blade to kill Joker, he can't do it. He sees the light. He doesn't kill people. As Joker is punched by Gordon, his face comes off and he's put into Arkham Asylum. Jerome, that is Joker. But that's not the end of Joker. That is just the beginning, believe me. But that episode plants the seed of Joker and Bruce Wayne, as Joker shuts down the whole city, as he does in a lot of the Batman movies, and creates the circuits. It's a great episode. And then you get to the other story of the By the Pier, the Riddler, Ed, and Oswald Penguin has a gun to Penguin as he talks himself out of it, saying he only killed his mistress because he loves the Riddler. But in a bad ending, my favourite character, Penguin, is shot, and then he falls into the water, and like a scene off the Titanic where Leonardo DiCaprio is sinking, his spirit is sinking in the ocean. It is just like that, as my favourite character Penguin disappears. Now whether Penguin comes back from the dead, like Jerome, you never know. Hopefully Penguin does, because my favourite character is murdered. And then a big seed is planted where you know Bruce Wayne's character is going to take over the show. Bruce Wayne, the fellow people, Gordon's uncle, who's probably going to create like Michael Carwin, Douglas Carwin, whatever, does with Batman, says, "Bruce Wayne, are you ready?" As the guy who is guiding Bruce, Master Bruce, says, "You're ready now, Bruce. You'll be ready." Because he's training him up from a kid. Now he's a bit of an adolescent to become what he will become. And we know that. Batman. As Gordon's uncle and this woman prepare him for his future, which creates another seed of Batman. So what do we expect? We expect from here, Jerome will be kept in the asylum. But that's not the end of Jerome. The Joker will come back stronger than ever. Bruce Wayne's seeds are planted and he's going to be ready to become what he becomes. And that's the saviour of Gotham, Batman. And then you're going to have the Riddler. We all know he's the Riddler, but after he killed Penguin, whether or not Penguin, I hope Penguin, was back from the dead, because he is the best character so far in it. I think Joker will be my favourite character as time goes on, but Penguin so far is my favourite character. So, I expect Ed to turn into the Riddler, fully turn into the Riddler, and create chaos just like the Joker did on this groundbreaking episode, which is the best episode in the whole series of Gotham, in my opinion. It's a great way to end it, so I'm really excited to see. It's not the end of the season, which is good, so we've got a couple of episodes left. So we'll see what goes on from there. Then season 4 should be even more exciting. And that is the story of the crazy Gotham. As you know, I belong in Arkham Asylum, because I am more than deranged and strange. And let's go to Inaco, Inaco. Cold fly on the fly of the high of the glide. I always spit my philosophy, but I'm going to go into some details of the El Nato Mexican immigrant. Everyone's watched Narcos. If they got Netflix, probably one of the number one shows on Netflix. And season 3 on Netflix is about the Mexican cartel. There's so many documentaries and books about the Mexican cartel. It overshadows anything that the Colombians ever, and I mean ever, did. Now expect some guests on the show in future, because I'm going to be taking your calls, and of course you do, I'm going to do it. Right, here we go. We are beginning at an odious but very interesting task, the building consciousness. Today we need to prepare to defend our ideas so that our struggle will bear fruit and organize so as to go down the best path, perhaps not the easiest, but the one that offers the best result. Pensamentos may not be a candidate for the Booker Prize, but Carlos assures me that the ideas hit home with the uneducated peasants of the Tierra Quilante, as does the notion that they can carry out vengeful violence in the name of the Lord. The religion gives thugs, once recruited, a discipline that makes them more reliable soldiers, but any of them mess up, they must face the wrath of God. According to the Familia Declarations, employees who make a first mistake are tied up into a room. On a second, they are tortured, and third mistake is their last. An obvious gaping contradiction of all of this is, how can drug traffickers, murderers claim to be devout Christians? To justify their actions, La Familia bosses argue that they are bringing better paying employment to the Michoacan, and like many gangsters, act as benevolent godfathers, handling Christmas presents to the poor kids in the mass events. They also pose as vigilantes, bringing defined justice to the lawless streets, and say that while they sell narco poison to the gringos, they won't deal to their own. They get out this message that they are really guardian angels, and that have taken a brash step of going to the media. When they first burst on the scene in 2006, they placed an ad in several newspapers. The Bravado Text has a headline entitled Mission, and went on: eradicate from the state of Michigan kidnapping, extortion, in person and by telephone, paid assassinations, express kidnapping, tractor trailer and auto theft, home robbers done by people like those mentioned who have made the state of Michoacán an unsafe place are so motivated that we love our state and are no longer willing to see our people's dignity trampled on. Later, one familiar member gave an interview to Mexican's top-selling news magazine, The Proceso, as La Tuta phoned up Mr. San, no show to learn about the familia's largest defense of the homeland. In another publicity stunt, the familia soldiers round up dozens of alleged rapists and muggers from the town of Zamora. Five were shot dead while the others were whipped and ordered to march down the street with banners confessing their heinous crimes. The Old Testament of justice was played out for real in the family's narco mission from the God. Carlo is adamant that the La Familia Emilia's claim to be vigilantes is simply posturing. They may kill kidnappers and extortionists, he says, but they only go ahead and kidnap and extort themselves. However, in the Tierra Caliente, some residents openly support the La Familia and argue that they are better at getting a debt back or solving a dispute than going to the courts of law. When it's the gunman asks for money, people rarely refuse. La Familia also uses religious plies, rally farmers and small-time hoodlums. They claim to be good Michoacán men who have driven out foreign Silonas and Zetas and even see the Federals off. In this spirit, the maddest one of them all, the troops, watched the movie Braveheart, which Mel Gibson stars in. As the La Familia gunmen shoot down the soldiers, they can feel like the Scottish barbarians beating out the bastard English. The Godfather movie trilogy was also a compulsory viewing, educating the men in loyalty and family values. So what is a Nazario? A deranged nutjob on meth or a religious visionary? One has to concede that there was a method to his madness. His religion, his quasi-ideology gave La Familia appeal and discipline, helping it become one of the fastest growing outfits in the Mexican drug war, as well as rapidly taking over the Michoacán state. La Familia has pushed into Jalisco, Guanajuato, Guerrero, Puebla and Mexican state, including the slums around the capital. La Familia scripture may sound like it's a harebrained hodgepodge, but it is no more illogical than various loony religions or extreme nationalist movements that have sprung out around the globe. You see, Satan and SFS is not a religion. So, I do not think of my religion as SFS as being deranged. It's against the drugs, it's against the Illuminati, and it's against God. That's what SFS stands for. And the experience of the Mexican drug war, gangs imitate the successful techniques of their rivals. El Mas Loco may not be the last Mexican capo to declare himself the master of his own temple. La Familia's success, however, put it bang on the police radar. American agents rounded up the La Familia operatives in cities including Dallas and Atlanta, and the Mexican government offered 30 million peso reward for Moreno's head. Someone close to the narco
An evangelist apparently went for this gold, informing the government he would be attending a Christmas party in the Tierra Caliente city of Apatzingán. In December 2010, as federal police and soldiers stormed the city, the cartel rapidly responded by calling their foot soldiers to block roads and attack troops. Gunfights broke out on the streets, claiming 11 lives, including that of a baby hit in the crossfire, but federal police claimed they had killed the target, the maddest one. However, Moreno had one last laugh. The federal police never captured his corpse. In the chaos of the shootout, federal police say La Familia operatives carried Moreno's cadaver into the mountains to bury him. In their own way, the government released a tape of fellow kingpin La Tuta conceding that Moreno has died, but when there was no corpse, suspicion could always linger in people's minds. Moreno became another source of fables, such as Carlillo Fernandez, who died in plastic surgery accident in 1997. The maddest one still wanders in the Tierra Caliente dressed as a peasant. People whispered, he is still alive. He is disguised as a priest giving mass in the Apatzingán, they muttered. The mystical Naco preacher has become a legend, and his teachings still have potent power in deceiving hearers of the birth in the Ceylon. And that's a bit of El Naco for you. That's the end of podcast 26. Now I just go get on and watch a bit of Girly and walk my dog. I feel a bit tired now. For some odd reason, I think I'm coming down with a cold. But I gotta get through it, you see. And that is final. Now, I hope you've not enjoyed the episode. And I hope I bored you to death. Now, fuck off.